Hi there, and welcome back to the Energy Sector Heroes podcast. My name is Michelle Fraser, and every week I will speak with incredible people who share their lessons, experiences, and stories from their time spent in the energy sector. Hi there, and welcome back again to this week's episode. If you're new to the show, then please take a second to subscribe and even consider sharing the show with just one other person. This week, I am joined by Brandon Baylor. Brandon is a fellow engineer and a board member of a non-profit organization. Brandon, would you like to introduce yourself, please?
Sure. Thanks, Michelle. Thanks for having me on the podcast. My name is Brandon Baylor. I'm currently an engineer at Chevron. I've been in industry for almost 15 years now. And as you said, recently have also started a nonprofit with some colleagues that's a nonprofit and working on science and philosophy and technology of a different way of computing. So quite a range of things I got going on, but it's happy to be here and share it with you.
Excellent. How did you get started off in the energy sector?
Well, I grew up in the United States in the Appalachian region, which has a pretty strong history of energy. And so I was sort of fortunate enough to be in proximity of some universities that offered a great petroleum engineering program. So I kind of lucked into it in that sense because I don't have much of a pedigree in the energy sector, but I always had an affinity for math and science and engineering. And, you know, due to my proximity to this region, I was able to get some undergraduate schooling there in Marietta, Ohio. I went to Marietta College. And so that was really my entry point. And, you know, throughout the course of my undergraduate studies, I did internships and, you know, that's how I found Chevron. I ended up interning with Chevron. I joined full time in 2011 out in California. So it's really just been a wild journey since then, but that was my start.
Okay. Because you work in robotics, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So I started in a very traditional upstream drilling and completions engineering capacity. So, you know, my first 3 years out of school, I was working on drilling rigs out in Central California, working in that field and getting the hands-on operational experience of upstream and wells drilling, right? So I started in upstream and, you know, worked in both the operation and well design in multiple business units. And then I guess about 7 years into my career, I started to realize there was a need for me to broaden my skill set. And I really wanted to be able to learn and think differently about the systems that govern a corporation, a big corporation like that. And how do we think about integrating systems and how do we manage this complexity of information that, you know, different domains have to deal with and work together to manage projects and solve problems. So, you know, about 7 years into my career, I started learning how to program. I learned how to do data science. I was really self-motivated to become a translator to those types of information systems and, you know, getting closer to computer science, data science. So that was a turning point in my career that, you know, as you mentioned, I'm a robotics engineer now. So part of that transition was that inflection point about midway through my career so far where I really wanted to broaden my skill set.
Okay. So what made you change to go into robotics and how does that actually work with, you know, how does that actually work within the energy sector?
Well, for one thing, I like the robotics because I like to be close to just technology development and innovation in general. And so that's really, as I was saying, I pivoted my career in a way that I was less of a domain expert in something like wells engineering or production or, you know, these classic upstream disciplines. And I wanted to get closer to sort of more general technology development, deployment, and adoption. And so, you know, I guess, you know, robotics is great right now because I have that hands-on experience working with you know, in upstream and now getting into refineries and different types of business units. But it, you know, you need people who kind of can translate between the technology and the systems and what's going on with the robotics and what's the use case, what's the application. And so I guess in that way I serve as a bit of a translator to be able to help drive adoption and start deploying robotics for things like cleaning tanks or inspecting tanks, among other things. So yeah, having that background in the domain, but also knowing how to relate to technology, people who are developing the technology is, I think, a key.
Okay, it sounds interesting. So, did you have any role models, and why did you find them inspirational?
Well, yeah, I think along my career, I've always been, I kind of respected people who were open to thinking differently and flexibility of challenging their own ways of thinking and thought patterns. And so there are a few colleagues over the years at Chevron who have really been role models and partners, thought partners to help me navigate my career. First and foremost, I would say they're a colleague of mine. His name is Esteban Montero. He's trained as a systems engineer. We met in 2019 because I was completing my master's degree at MIT's system design and management program, which he had also gone through. And he and I met and started sharing ideas and just, challenging sort of the ways that we go about managing systems and complexity in our business today. And so he and I have been partners for a long time. We wrote a book together about the challenges of thinking differently about systems and complexity. So that was published in 2022. So he was a role model that really just, he took my career in a different trajectory. Helped me realize that myself, I guess, what I wanted to do. Another would be a colleague named Ben Randall, who was my product line manager when I worked in the digital space, developing software solutions and information solutions. He, another just progressive thinker. I love the vulnerability and just willingness to try new things. So I think those types of people, I think, change is the only constant. So people who can manage it, lean into those sort of uncertainties is what stood out to me in my career.
Yeah, but it's interesting that you said that you had influential people that would help you realize what you wanted to do. Is that really something that you struggled with throughout your career?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think that part of, I kind of started off on the very traditional track, right? Like I hadn't contemplated or examined within myself, done that work to really find out what I wanted to do, what was the career path I wanted to take, what impact did I want to make? And so I think it did take from me meeting people like that to we always, Esteban and I say, hold up a mirror for each other. Like he basically helped me do that work and see the value in it, so I could not just be guided and glide through my career without really contemplating it. But yeah, it takes courage to kind of change your career path or to go on a new venture like we're doing, and lean into that tension of how do I manage my professional job and my creative outlets. So yeah, I think in a way it was helpful to have mentors and role models that support that.
Okay, so how do you manage your creative outlet then?
Well, I always try to integrate it into my life in all aspects, professional, personal. So I try not to separate them, but I think that the ideas that we have with the nonprofit are so new and so early stage that it sort of required a self-sustaining entity, a new entity to basically be able to separate. So yeah, right now we have that as our sort of space to create, to think, because it's hard in business, right? We're driven by execution and performance, and we don't have time for philosophy and thinking deeply about some things and reinventing ourselves. And so I guess that's why you maybe can tell from my sort of profile that we had to create a new institution to be able to open a new discourse and dialogue around things that we think are critical to the energy sector in many businesses, but it's such an early stage that it needed its own space.
Okay, so what kind of things do you think is critical to the energy sector just now then?
Well, I think that the biggest thing for me, and that has really driven my career the last several years, is, I think we need to recognize the challenge of integrating systems within the energy sector. Like, I really think that integration is the key to the future of energy. And I think oftentimes it's overlooked as a technical challenge, and we sort of try to get by with the management frameworks that we've always used or operating models we've always used. And I think that an entirely new way of managing systems and complexity is required to deal with the diversity of energy systems and perspectives and just systems that we have to manage, especially with the ongoing energy transition, right? So we're adding more energy sources to the portfolio. How do you manage that diversity? And I think that the future will be led by those who can integrate all systems. You know, and I think of an analogy with Ford, right? Back in the day, they really took the lead in the automotive industry, not by developing better components or verticals, but by integrating everything together better than anyone else. And so I think that we need to start recognizing the technical challenge of integration in new ways and really expose how we can approach that differently.
I actually agree as well. Actually, I think you're 100% correct that we do need to do that. So have you had any mentors during your career?
Yes. Well, you know, I've had many great supervisors and role models who have, you know, supported me throughout my career. I was fortunate enough to get schooling and be able to attend my master's degree at MIT. So, you know, that environment really shaped my thinking. The people I met there, I just exposed me to new ideas. And it really just expanded my mind in so many ways to be able to think about these problems, like the challenge of integration differently. And so meeting people in academia and people doing research, people at the frontier of new math and science of thinking about systems and integration have really been role models for me. There are several that I've been fortunate enough to work with over the years to try and actually create new frameworks to deal with that integration challenge that we described. So I think those folks really stand out to me.
Okay. What is the most challenging thing about your current role?
Well, I think, you know, to be more specific on my current role, which is I'm a robotics project engineer. So we're trying to deploy robotic solutions to different business units. And I think that anytime you have a new way of doing things, you try to introduce a technology solution, there's always a change behavior element that's difficult, right? Nobody likes to change. So I think how we manage that, the understanding the social elements and managing it with care has been a key, I think, to be able to get people comfortable with technological solutions that are new and different ways of thinking. It's not just a technology challenge. It's also there's a social and cultural implication that we have to think deeply about and manage. So I spend a lot of time trying to build relationships and align and work with different stakeholders that are going to ultimately adopt and deploy these robotic solutions. So I would say that also recognizing that social aspect is key.
I do agree with that, actually, wholeheartedly. So what do you enjoy most about your current role?
I would say that a couple things stand out. One is just the exposure to all aspects of a global business is a great experience and in so many different ways. So I enjoy no longer just in a very narrow slice of upstream, you know, drilling and completion. Now I get to interact with the entire value chain of an energy company, right? So upstream, midstream, downstream, it really expands the horizon. You can start to notice patterns, right, in the ways that we work and challenges that we face. So that exposure has been great. I also enjoy being in a robotics group because, you know, and this is kind of one of the arguments that Esteban and I make in the book that we wrote. We think that it's challenging to try and just do everything through digital information systems, right? I like robotics because it's material. There's a physical manifestation, and it's not just, you know, a computer or computation or some digital representation that's purely like in the mind. It's embodied, it's physical, and sort of working directly in that space with matter and physical systems, not only and the software, hardware and software, I think is interesting to me because it relates to what we're trying to do with the nonprofit with regards to how can we basically manage systems that are embodied and collective. And, you know, I think there's a limitation in how we try to do it purely through digital informational means. So that way, that's an interesting part of my job as well, is the manifestation of robotics as the body and the, of the software. So
Okay, but that must be a unique situation that you're in, being able to work on multiple stream levels, because normally a lot of people only really focus on one.
yeah, no, it's great to be able to have that diversity of work, and that's what I enjoy. I enjoy kind of being more general in my skill set, having a broad range versus becoming an expert in one very narrow thing, right? So I think about this a lot, where, again, integration is sort of one of my passions, trying to reimagine it, right? So I think that integration, you need to, if you get to, there's a saying, I'm a student of sort of like Zen Buddhism in my personal time, but there's a saying that in a book called Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, which is that in the mind of the expert, the possibilities are limited, but in the mind of a beginner, the possibilities are endless. And so the more we get deeper into our own domain and assumptions and ways of doing things, it kind of closes off our openness to new things, to seeing new things, to integrating with other things. And so I always try to cultivate a beginner's mind, because I can see things fresh. It gets me new insights. And so in a way, I almost resist the urge to become an expert in a specific domain, which is maybe counterintuitive and not the normal sort of career. Usually the aspiration in engineering and energy is to become an expert in your field, right? And that's how you work your way up. So I've kind of tried to counter that trend for my own reasons. And but to your point, that mindset has allowed me to work on multiple streams, see multiple challenges, and find analogies between them in ways that I think otherwise would have been challenging.
Do you think it's better to be a more of a generalist working on multiple streams rather than to be a specialist?
Well, I wouldn't even label it better or worse. I think we need both. I think the challenge is in, how do you compose or integrate these different disciplines? And I think that's why integration is so challenging, is because I think we need more people thinking about in this general way, but also a technology in like a first principled way to manage all this diversity of domains and expertise and specialists. I think that's why we're stuck in silos still, is because we don't have a new technological framework, a new science of managing and operating systems. The people, the processes, the tools. Like, I think that we need both, right? So I wouldn't say it's either or. I would say we have to find ways to compose everything, right?
Yeah, I think so too, actually. I do think that. What is your zone of genius? What are you most good at?
What am I most good at? I think that it's in the vein that we've been talking. I think the capacity to stay open, it's difficult, right? To enter new domains and not be the expert. So I think it takes an open heart and courage and curiosity. And I think that yeah, maybe those seem like soft skills, but I think they're critical to the journey that I'm on. And it's not soft in the sense that one of the things that I think I'm really proud of is, when I graduated from MIT in 2020, I learned about a new branch of mathematics called category theory. It's a very small community of mathematicians. There's probably only 100 or a couple hundred in the world, because it's such a new branch of mathematics. It's basically, it drew me in, because I see it as sort of the math and science of systems and connections and relationships. It completely is a new way of thinking. It allows us to reimagine things like integration as we're talking. And so it's very abstract, it's new. It challenged my entire worldview, like trying to learn this new type of math in the last few years. But like I said, I've been fortunate to work with leaders in the field, like world leaders in this new discipline, and myself become. I'm definitely not an expert, because I'm not a mathematician, but I basically am in a position of, I know how to translate. I'm between academia and sort of industry practice, and I'm trying to bring new forms of math and science to think differently about integration. And it's a small group of us that know the business and know the application, but also are fluent enough in this new math, which is very, it's not challenging, but it's new. And that's what makes it challenging. So I think that's probably where I would say my zone of expertise is. I know how to bring, I know how to integrate and compose systems in new ways, as well as anyone out there. So
I think that's an amazing skill to have, actually. I do.
Well, so, I think, like you said, it's, if you agree that integration is the biggest challenge of our time, then we need to start to thinking about new technologies and science behind it. And that's why I was motivated, because I see something here that category theory, and I don't want to describe it on, you know, it's because I think it's too detailed, but I see it as sort of like a new first principle for managing complex systems, almost like, you know, Newton's equations underpin mechanical engineering. I think category theory and other tools can basically be the principled foundation for complex systems. It's a new science of system integration. And that's definitely what I'm most passionate about and put my energy towards.
I was going to ask you to explain it, actually, because I've not really heard of it.
Well, I mean, not many have. So I'll do my best to keep it high level. So basically, category theory it came about, and it was first sort of discovered, I guess, by mathematicians in the 40s, and then in the 70s, sort of the seminal book or text was written by a guy named Saunders McLean, Categories for the Working Mathematician. And so it wasn't really until like 2010-ish, like the last 10 or 15 years, that the applied category theory community came to sort of touch on the edges of industry. And so it's a very new field, it's like I said. And category theory is basically, the easiest way to describe it, it's like the math of relationships and of connections, of how things are related to each other. So typically when we model systems, when we like to describe things and represent them by labeling them, right? We put things in buckets and we sort of categorize things based on sets, whatever set they fall into, like we were doing earlier. Well, is it better to do this or that? And category theory basically flips the script and says, don't focus on the intrinsic property or the membership of the object, you know, describe things by how they relate to other things. And that's a completely, like, and this is the math to allow you to do that rigorously and formally. So if you know, why is this important? Because everything is connected. Like, especially we're increasingly facing a complex world that more connections, more digital connections, more geopolitical connections, like how we relate to other things is actually a key to understanding integration and working together and harmony and so on. So category theory is basically the math of how to think about those relationships in a new way.
Okay. So how do, for our younger audience members, how do you get into that though?
Well, I think that's a question that motivated the book that I co-authored, because, you know, we have a section in the book called There's a Hole in Education, basically. I think that to truly reinvent the way we manage complexity in systems, we have to also look at the systems that educate us. And so it's difficult because engineers aren't trained to think in this way, to think in abstractions, to sort of, you know, they're very utilitarian, and it's very, they want concrete, and, you know, this is an equation. There's only one way to look at the equation, that sort of objectivity. And so what I think is needed and what category theory helps with is kind of reimagining that, allowing for different perspectives. How do you translate between the subjective? How do you, you know, how do you allow for that plurality of viewpoints? And so it's difficult. They're like, the education system's not primed right now to deal with that or to train people. And but that's why, that's part of what my nonprofit's doing, right? We want to be able to create a space where young people and new people and everybody can come into this new way of thinking with an on-ramp, right? Now there's a cliff. It's like there's two books about category theory that are very entry level, non-technical, and then there's like PhD level textbooks, and there's nothing in between. And so part of my sort of journey has been trying to fill in that, make a bridge between those worlds so that people can start to see what we see and the potential behind this thing.
Okay. That sounds excellent, actually. So have you experienced any career disasters?
Well, I would say, again, the labels, I would never label it as a disaster because sometimes when things fall apart, it leads to something new and beautiful. So I tried again. This is part of my journey the last few years is seeing beyond the dichotomy of good or bad. And but you know, I can say I've had moments in my career that have marked, you know, stood out in my memory and I really call back to. I can mention one because I think it ties up a lot of what we've been discussing. You know, I have a story when I was an early career wells engineer, right? I was basically designing the wells that were drilled in a certain business unit, and early career, right? I just kind of got into the office from being out in the field. And again, this is going to be about the challenge of integrating systems and perspectives. But what happened was that a requirement had changed at the global level, like a global standard requirement had changed. I had to adjust my design to stay compliant. And I basically did my job. I went about an engineering solution. I came up with something I thought was great. It worked really well for my local context I was in, my local team. You know, it was cost savings, it was compliant, it was great. You know, got the pat on the back, got the performance review went well. But then like 6 or 8 months later, I got a call from like a construction rep who sort of was like, hey, you know, I we're having to absorb the you created problems for us basically with your great solution. And I was like, oh, I had no idea, you know, because my job was so many degrees of separation removed from this other team. I didn't have a way to like see the effects, the cascading effects of my local solution. And so it wasn't a disaster per se, but it was a lesson for me. And it really stoked this my whole thinking around how do we integrate better? Because, you know, every solution, when everything is connected and you really embrace and accept that, every solution is a problem for somebody else. And so that's why, you know, that got me thinking about how can we go about connecting these perspectives, integrating them, composing them? And I want to know the unintended consequences of the systems I create, the things I design. And so that story has always stood out for me and really motivated me to look for new ways to think about systems and how we manage perspectives in a diverse and you know, global organization.
Okay. If you were going to hire anybody or going to interview someone, what would the key aspects that you would look for in a new graduate?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think like this is my own projection, I guess, because I'm gonna probably repeat myself, but I would look for qualities that convey an openness to learning new things, a curiosity, a sense of curiosity, a sense of humility. I mean, of course, there's sort of a scientific baseline that we need as engineers, right? But I would also, you know, I think I would look for the same qualities that allowed me to keep growing and have a growth mindset to continue to expand my capabilities, because I think that, you know, the change is constant, right? I think throughout our careers, the ability to be adaptive, flexible is so key. So I would look for sort of, you know, are they comfortable in dealing in that general space? Are they comfortable with ambiguity and flexibility? I mean, of course, we need people who know engineering and physics and chemistry and material science and all of those things for sure. But I think also computer science is another big one. I think that, you know, for me personally, systems engineering was a great door that I opened and kind of led me to this whole space that I think is needs more people thinking, you know, entrained and thinking about systems, how they're related, how behavior emerges, and what are the unintended consequences of the things that we make. So, yeah, I guess there's a lot, but a lot of it boils down to, you know, are you willing to stay open throughout your career, you know, and embrace change, and yeah, that's what I would say.
Okay. I was going to say that you have had, to this point, you've had an amazing career and you're still really quite young, actually. And I just wonder, do you have any advice for any new graduates wanting to come into the engineering space?
Yeah. Wow. Thank you. So I think that always be basically willing to challenge your own thinking. I think, you know, this is another way of saying what I was saying before, but You have to be able to reflect on yourself and like I said, you need people to hold up mirrors for you so that you can do the work to really contemplate what you want to do. I feel an incredible sense of responsibility to try and engineer safer, more reliable, more harmonious systems. And I think that people need to find their own sort of what drives them, what's their purpose, and figure out how to integrate it with the job that they do. I think if you don't have that integration of work and life balance, it can be difficult. So I think on doing the work to contemplate that, to sort of, see our own, expose and see and reveal our own delusions sometimes. I think sometimes, I mean, for me, this speaking for me personally, yeah, there's so many incentives and structures that drive us to behave a certain way. And I think that a lesson I would say is to try and figure out how to develop a capacity to self-reflect and understand the implications of what we're doing, so that way we can work towards a more harmonious future.
And that's excellent advice. I'm going to lead on with, is there anything you want to still achieve in your career? Because you've achieved quite a lot at this point. You've been a co-author. I did look at your profile and you've been a keynote speaker.
That's right.
So is there anything you still want to achieve in your career?
Wow, thank you. That's a great question. I guess at this point I'm not motivated by, climbing a ladder or managing a team or having sort of positional authority or anything like that. I almost feel more like an artist sometimes, and creating things and sharing ideas, meeting the people I meet along the way. I really just try my best to be present in everything that I'm doing and enjoy it moment by moment. So in a way, I actually try to detach myself from future goals or objectives, and I'm not trying to attain anything. And when you, for me, when I attain that, when I adopt that mindset, it's liberating and allows me to manage this diversity of things that I'm working on and find peace in it all. So I would say I just want to keep creating, and I think that, if you look into the nonprofit organization that I'm starting up and working on with colleagues, it's so early. And I feel like in a way I'm trying to build a technology and a system for future generations. Like, I have two small kids, and I don't know that I'll ever get to see the technology that we're thinking about come to reality, but I hope that we're laying the groundwork for people 50 or 100 years from now. That's kind of how transformational we think these ideas are. So yeah, I find peace in that sometimes, that it's not about any objective now or a career aspiration. It's like I want to lay a groundwork for future generations to be able to have healthier systems and work together and drive collective action in new ways. So I guess that's what motivates me and keeps me going.
I mean, that is an amazing answer, actually. Do you think that not having a focus on climbing the career path is quite freeing?
It is. I mean, it's challenging, right? It's challenging, right? Because every incentive and the context that I'm in my day-to-day professional career is sort of expected of me to do that, like to continue to grow and in positions and career ladder and et cetera. And so it's very counterintuitive and actually difficult to sort of resist that actively, right? Or resist is a strong word, but to acknowledge that it's not a motivation for me. So, I mean, I have to manage that, and but it's given me this flexibility, right? The ability to see so much more, to try and think differently, and you have to, of course, stay aligned with the corporate initiatives and all that, and I do. But yeah, I do think that it's been liberating and helped me be more flexible in my approach to designing safer and better systems.
It is commendable that you do enjoy your work. I mean, what has been your key highlight in your career so far?
Well, I think these last few years, the work that we've done to shed light on this new community of scientists and mathematicians thinking differently about the science of integration and connections and relationships, I mean, that that to me is sort of the legacy that I'm proud of, to be able to actually bring the re bring resources and actually develop new frameworks and new tools to deal with complexity with these esteemed researchers and academics. I think that, to me, that has been the highlight. I think we put that on the map in some ways with the book and with the work that we're doing, the talks we're giving. So more and more people are sort of, we're creating a community. I mean, that's the most exciting part, is to bring people together, and to it's a legacy that transcends any one individual like me, right? So I think that sort of foundation that we're creating is has been my highlights, and at least one that comes to mind first.
And that is really commendable as well. So I'm going to wrap up and I ask everybody the same question. If you could turn back time, would you change anything?
Well, I think the simple answer is no, because, as I said before, I think that I don't label things as good or bad, or I would have changed this or I would have changed that. I think life is, it's not a problem to be solved, or I could have done this better. If only I would have worked harder, if only I would have gotten up earlier. And that mindset is, to me, is a trap of anxiety and struggle and harm to yourself, really. I try to be compassionate with myself and just see that life is a journey in a reality to experience, right? It's not a problem to be solved. So I would say no. Every moment has been unique and precious, and I lean into not only the pleasurable and happy moments, but the challenges and, the difficult ones. So yeah, I would say no to that, Michelle.
And that is also an excellent answer as well. So that's all the questions I have today. I would like to thank Brandon for your time. That brings us to the end of another episode. Thanks for listening and see you next week. That brings us to the end of another episode. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, I'd like to gently encourage you to leave a 5-star rating wherever you listen to podcasts and share the show with another person. You can also follow me on LinkedIn or via my website, www.michellefraserconsultancy.com. Thanks again for listening and see you next week.